Little Emily biting her sister, or is teenage Barry refusing to help around the house? Consulting psychologist David Carey joins us to answer all your parenting woes. Anyway, it is time for our parenting slot. Coleman Nocter joins us once again. Afternoon, Coleman.
Afternoon, Sean.
Right, first question for you is this. My son is 8 years old, is a bright, sociable child who is big into sports. I worry that my son is so competitive that he holds himself back from enjoying partaking in a sport. Recently, the school had a cross-country competition, but he did not put his name down to race, as he didn't think he would do well in it. My husband and I both run, and he's a naturally built runner. He knows he's fast. However, unless he knows he can win, he won't take part, and this is the reason he did not put his name down. He thinks people will laugh at him if he doesn't come first, and gets very down after a race or a match if he hasn't won or missed a goal chance. I don't think my husband and I have instilled a competitive nature in him. He has a four-year-old sister who is seeing the type of attitude in her brother, and while she has shown no signs yet, we would not like to see her become too competitive. I worry that he puts a lot of pressure on himself at such a young age to win. He does not get into a temper during matches with any of the other players. This is mostly aimed at himself, or he takes it out on us. Any advice on how to manage this competitive behaviour?
Yeah, I'm delighted this has come up, because this is something that you'd see an awful lot. And I think probably more so in the last number of years. The competitive nature of childhood has always been there. But I think the emphasis on kind of external validators like medals and grades and things seems to be far more at the forefront of children's minds at an earlier stage than ever before. And I think as probably sports organisations and parents and schools, we probably inadvertently encourage that a little bit. For this little boy, I mean, he's the lens with which he understands sport is that, you know, you have to win in order for it to be worthwhile. So he's not seeing the benefit in partaking in it, and, you know, partaking without winning is futile. But I would also say that he probably is very anxious. Sometimes children can be the victim of their own success. If they're very good at a sport, that comes with a pressure to always be good and always win and always excel. And, you know, I've seen numerous children over the last number of years who have described, you know, throwing games or running slowly in a race to not win in order to lessen that pressure. And, you know, I suppose pressure coming, I mean, mum here is asking about, you know, not encouraging his competitiveness, but she mentions that he's fast and he's a natural runner, even though he's only 8. You know, children would pick up on those things being said and is mom not wanting me to compete in this because, or wants me to compete in it because it's a chance to win another medal? Or, you know, I have enough on. And some children, again, trying to regulate that and kind of step out of it is a real pressure. Where you see this in girls is oftentimes in terms of results, you know, in terms of having to get 100%. And if the model that they make is not perfect, it gets ended in the bin. And it's a kind of an extreme response to competitiveness. Which I believe is fueled by anxiety. I think as a society, we need to start, you know, measuring effort rather than outcome. I think we've become overly outcome focused. I think we are living in a very comparative culture where we're always looking over the fence at each other. And I think children pick up on that. And I just think I've no kids who go to school awards ceremonies, and so many of them, you know, because they're not the best at the debating team or the chess team, come away with nothing. And I'd love to see a different kind of value on someone who's maybe overcome adversity in a year, or maybe managed something that they get acknowledged for that as well. I would have been on record of kind of being critical of Tiger parents who kind of push children into competitive things, and I think many parents do that, as I say, perhaps not deliberately. I remember, you know, kids maybe who are struggling with academics, and you'd say, you know, mum and dad, this kid needs support. And their response would be, well, we get him grinds. And you're kind of thinking, no, I mean, he needs some time off. He just needs to not have this pressure in his life. And I suppose for me, I think there's a multi-pronged approach. I think schools, families, we all need to look at perhaps diluting the intensity of the outcome and concentrating much more on the partaking, because it is happening at a younger age where kids of 6 are being left on the sidelines and, you know, being a sub for 5 weeks of the time that they're going, and become demoralised and don't really want to partake in sport for that reason. It's a concern that I'd have.
But though at the same time, sport can teach you things, and can't it also teach you that you lose? some of the time you lose, maybe most of the time you lose, and that's a valuable lesson for life.
Yeah, and I absolutely think that. I mean, I'm not saying it's a kind of everyone wins and everyone gets a prize. I'm not. I don't think that teaches children much at all. But I think at like pre-8, you know, you're really introducing a child into a life of sport, and if they get a positive experience of that, it's something that they'll hopefully continue into their teenage years. And many drop off and they kind of hit 14, 15, the camogie goes and the disco takes over. But you know, I just think starting out that children should all have a chance to get some of the ball to play it, and it shouldn't be just the elite kids who are really strong at it that are recognised in that way. I think you can introduce competition as children get older, and you know, again, small children, you know, they I'm thinking of my daughter, if she's playing snap and she doesn't win, she can go off in a huff, but you have to teach her to come back and play for the next time. So I'm not suggesting that it's everyone wins, but I think we introduce competition gradually, and I just think children who are good shouldn't be put under too much pressure. I remember, and this is not a new phenomenon, I remember a cousin of mine was a really good GAA player, and he started playing with the under 16s, and then within a few weeks he was playing intermediate, he was playing 6 or 7 games a week, and he was, you know, his knees were in a jock before he was 19, you know. Exactly, so we need to mind people who are good, and you know, heap off the psychological pressure that they also can partake in something that they're not good in. And for this little boy, I mean, I would really try and dilute the intensity of winning, try and get him involved in things that he's maybe not the best at, and trying to get him to enjoy the activity of taking part, and maybe dilute the importance of winning. Because at 8, you know, he's already creating a bit of a belief or an understanding of what partaking in sport's about, and it's a bit off point.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like the parents, though, are very keen runners, and whilst they mightn't have intended to do that, he sees them running regularly, he probably sees them in sports gear, he sees them talking about running, so he feels he perhaps is letting them down.
Yeah, and I think lots of children do. I mean, a lot of parents who might vicariously want to live through the sport through their child, you know, in terms of, you know, I was always, I'm going on a rant here, but I apologize for that. Like, you know, the idea of the swimming pool that you need to be in it at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, and you know, I've asked people who do that and say, why is that? Is there some sort of physiological reason that you swim faster in the morning? And the kind of response is, no, it's to separate the splashers from the Olympians. Do you know what I mean? So it demands a commitment that you need to do that, and live up to that. And lots of parents will drive your kids to the pools at 6 in the morning and all that sort of stuff, and will buy into that. And I think inadvertently kids pick that up as pressure. And like, if he's been told, you know, at 8 years of age, you're a national runner and you're fast and you should go into this because you could win it, he's hearing that as pressure. And I would just wonder, wait, maybe to mind the just how you talk about things around him, and just ask him, did he enjoy the game rather than all the things that he did well. I would worry about that he takes it out on himself. He's not like shouting at team members who kick the ball wide or whatever. He's kind of giving them out himself. And I suppose when we hear about things like there's now silent sidelines in kids' underage games, the parents can't encroach on the under sixes, you know, GA matches or whatever it might be. That's an indictment of how we're maybe losing sight of children's sports and what they might be all about.
Yeah. My 5-year-old son, who's in senior infants, is being called names by other kids in his class. I noticed this happening while I was helping out at a school event. I asked my son about it, and he said they do it to him a lot. I told him to call them on it and stand up for himself, not to let them call him names. Is that the right thing to do? I told my son to fight back with a verbal warning and then a physical warning. I know we shouldn't tell our kids to hit another kid, but I know from having 4 brothers, the only way to get respect in a group of boys and not be bullied is to show your strength. Telling the teacher or ignoring this constant sneering from other boys only encourages them. Am I right?
Some people would agree. I personally wouldn't. I think from the point of view of telling a child to stand up to a bully verbally by saying, you know, get lost or don't say that or whatever it might be, is fine. But in most cases, the children who are being bullied don't have the sophistication to articulate that response or stand up to somebody physically. And it's oftentimes, it places too much responsibility on the child to try and manage that. I would think in this case, like, he's five, so he's just started school by the sounds of things. Mm. This is a perfect opportunity to manage this dynamic within this group. Because what happens is, if a bullying culture within a year or a group, it can kind of continue all the way up and all the way through.
Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately, I see on a daily basis children who've been devastated by bullying experiences that have, you know, been prolonged for years or not managed or whatever it might be. So I would encourage mum to be absolutely proactive in this. I would go in and speak to the school about it, and, you know, you're going to school without the kind of threat of being sneered at or called names, or a threat to your physical or psychological safety is not a luxury, it's a right.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need to protect children's ability to feel safe in school. And I'd have a path worn to the teachers until this was resolved, because there's a group of children who could learn from this. You know, I also speak to children who are perpetrators of bullying, and, you know, there's their own stuff going on as well. But if you could catch that at five, it's far easier remedied than trying to resolve it when they're 15.
Yeah.
But, you know, every school should have an anti-bullying policy. Go in and have a look at it as a parent and try and have a kind of coherent response with the school and yourself to try and respond to it. I think leaving it up to the child to do it themselves is unlikely to work, because if he was able to stand up for himself and manage it, this wouldn't be a problem.
They're only five.
Yeah. I mean, and again, I suppose this is another thing, and maybe some listeners will disagree with me on this. I mean, bullying is an intentive act where what you're doing, you have the knowledge that it's hurting the other person.
Mm.
So there's a lot of banter where people might call you names or have a nickname for you that they don't understand that that's hurting the other person. You have to let the person know what you're saying to me or to that child is hurting them and they're upset by it, so please stop. If it persists after that point, then it becomes bullying in that sense. You know, in terms of, you know, to decide what's playground banter and what's somebody who's intimidating another person willfully, who's actually intentionally going out to hurt the other person. So you have to make the other kids know that what they're doing is wrong, and then you have to nip it in the bud, really, and not allow that to get on, because it starts as that, and, you know, it can build into exclusion and all these sorts of things. And unfortunately, there's a lot of children out there who are struggling with being victims of bullying for years at a time before it becomes managed, and that's, I think that's dreadfully unfortunate.
Actually, just come back to the competitive child thing. One texter says, my teacher put me in the corner, and after about 15 minutes, I realised I was the flag. I never kicked a ball again.
That's tragic.
That is tragic. Una says, hear, Coleman, in my son's secondary school and others that their friends are in, they have awards nights for both academic and sports, and only those who win awards are invited. It's very exclusive. My sons would be sporty and good academically, but yet never get awards. What must it say to them? Says Una. Indeed. Someone else says, try horse riding for kids. It teaches cooperation with a partner, the pony. Lots of work and fun. You will not win all the time. You learn to respect success and failure just the same. Says Pip, which may well be a while ago. My five-year-old has started to wet the bed. She's wet the bed about five times in the last month. She started primary school in September and became a big sister for the first time in July. And I'm wondering, is this related to her beginning to wet the bed? How should we talk to her about this? She doesn't seem to be bothered that it's happening, but in general would be a little bit of a perfectionist.
Alas, we have it again. I suppose I'm gathering that this girl had been trained before, and this is something that she's doing. So that's what we call secondary enuresis. So that's more likely to be something of a psychological origin. So it could be a stress event. This kid's been through an awful lot in the last few months. The arrival of the sibling obviously feels usurped perhaps a bit in that role, and she's been there for 4 years on her own. So she's quite established as being the only child in that sense, and then consequently sent to school. So I'm sure she's probably struggling a little bit with all of that going on. For me, I mean, if it's happening five times a month, it's not a massive problem in that it's happening. So I'm thinking, as she settles herself down and things start to become more routine, that will be better for her. It's very difficult to talk to a 5-year-old about emotions or how they feel about something, because they don't generally have the language to do that. So that kind of regressive pull of going back a stage of development, it wouldn't be unusual. But what I found is, if you know the movie Inside Out,
yeah,
if you use that as a kind of a template with kids to talk about anxiety, stress, worry, anger, all those sorts of things, they can understand that template a lot better. And it just adds a useful way of kind of discussing with really small children the aspect of emotion, that sometimes you can feel happy, angry and sad all at the same time.
Yeah.
Because she may be happy to have her new sibling, but also feeling a bit angry and sad that she's been ousted a little bit. But I've no doubt that if things stay consistent, there's no great other changes, no house moves, no major other events, she'll grow out of that and she'll be fine.
Yeah. So should she even kind of refer to it or make a big deal of it or talk to her about the bedwetting per se, given the bedwetting is probably just a symptom?
The bedwetting is the end of the road bit. It's the meaning behind the behaviour is more important. So trying to ask her how she's managing in school and even saying, you know, we miss you here at home and, you know, that we're still thinking of you when you're there and, you know, try and include her in bits and just keep her visible. A little bit of mammy in her time might be no harm.
Yeah. My son is almost 3.5 and is not talking. He's been to a paediatrician and an audiologist and they've given him the all clear. He's presently in speech therapy and has been going to play school since August. He is very social, happy little boy, but he just has no clear speech. He is definitely trying to talk, but no speech coming. I'm really worried about this and would appreciate your insight as no one knows why.
Yeah, people often assume that there's a psychological origin to children who are slow to sleep to speak, and oftentimes there isn't. This child has been to an audiologist, he's in speech therapy, and they've gone to the GP. So this family is doing everything they possibly can for him. And he's a happy, sociable little boy, which, you know, is really good, that because children who struggle to sleep or to speak can oftentimes have tantrums out of frustration that they can't communicate what they want to say or how they want to articulate themselves. So that's really good. I'd have no concerns. I mean, I'm not a speech therapist, so I don't know the answer to that, but they seem to have all the bases covered for this little lad, and he will talk. And I've seen umpteen children who maybe didn't speak till later than that, who turn out to be complete chatterboxes, who tend to make up for the time lost. So I wouldn't worry too much. He's has all the supports that he needs at the moment, and that again should resolve itself with time.
I have a challenging 7-year-old who is uncooperative, cheeky, has no respect for teachers or parents, bit of a rogue and a class joker. My issue is that his dad has zero interest in working with me on any boundaries or reward charts, etc. Dad has never ever says no to treats, screens, toys, etc. He is completely unwilling to work with me on his behaviour. We are separating. My son's roguish or an anarchic personality predates the marriage issues. In the long term, what do you do when one parent is completely unwilling to engage in enforcing positive behaviour in their child?
It's really difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, again, if you look at any parenting advice, the one thread through it is routine and consistency.
Yeah.
So I would often say to parents, if you're going to be kind of lenient or kind of lean towards bohemian, both be that. If you're going to be disciplinarian, both be that, rather than having a split between the two. Because what children do is they test behavior to see a response. And as they get a consistent response, they get to know where the line is. And that regulates their behavior. If they're getting an inconsistent response from both parents all the time, they've no idea where the line is and where what is acceptable and what is not. And it just, what that means is they'll test more. So this little lad is not getting any sort of consistent regulation feedback from what is acceptable in terms of his behaviour and not.
Yeah.
And it may change from, and even times we can do that as parents ourselves, but rather than it being two separate parents, as I'd say, the rule, you know, on Saturday has to be the same rule as it is on Thursday night when you're knackered and tired. It has to be consistent. You have to hold the line for the child to know how to behave and regulate themselves. In the case where there's two parents who are at odds at what they're both teaching the child is the right thing, is going to make further behaviours, and this will get more and more difficult. It also seems that this child is what we'd call triangulated. He's being a pawn in the parents' conflict. And that, again, doesn't bode well because the caller here has said that she's separating at the moment. A child who becomes that kind of an instrument to punish the other parent with undoubtedly gets embroiled in that, and it becomes much more challenging. They have to find some form of a consistent hymn sheet, and dad needs to come on board or mum needs to try and help him to do that, because with that inconsistency, I can't imagine the child learning any other way than having a consistent reinforcement. This is a problem.
Yeah, because you can see, given that they are separating, so when it seems that relations aren't good or even civil, that if she's saying to him, well, you have to do X, Y, and Z with the child, he's more inclined to say no because she's saying it to him.
For sure.
Yeah. So maybe a third party or somebody who, you know, that they both like and respect and that the husband might listen to see the logic of...
In some cases, I mean, obviously the school is a consistent in this kid's life, but he seems to be kind of displaying those anarchic behaviours there as well. I mean, in most situations, if you can get some sort of harmony between parents' rules, that the behaviour should improve measurably in that time. But this is a challenge.
Yeah. You'd wonder too. I mean, she did say that the relationship issues predate the son's roguish personality issues. Maybe one had an effect upon the other. Maybe the son was aware of this stuff. You'd be surprised what they're aware of. My 8-year-old son is sensitive to high frequency sounds. He has had hearing tests and all is good, but he's finding it very difficult to go outside as he's afraid of what noises might be there. Any advice would be much appreciated. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's remarkably common. Lots of children are very sensitive to loud noises. I know even my own little guy hates hand dryers in public toilets. You know that. He'll ask, is there a hand dryer before going in? And I was just thinking before, you know, we were watching some fireworks there on Sunday night, and about 50% of the kids had their hands over their ears watching it. They liked the look of it, but not the noise of it. So that's kind of common. However, those kind of things don't tend to impede on the child's functioning. They can still get on with things. Whereas this little boy seems to be fearful of going outside. What I'd recommend in this situation is he's having some sensory difficulties. I would get him assessed by an occupational therapist who can do a sensory assessment on him and kind of teach him ways to try and be a bit more resilient and robust to those noises, and he should be able to manage much better.
I'm having some trouble toilet training my almost 4-year-old son. We started just after he turned 3. He seemed ready, but he's never really got it. We have no downstairs toilet, and I can't help thinking he just can't be bothered. It doesn't bother him to be wet. He comes home from preschool wet almost every day, and I send in a change of clothes for him every day too. On average, he's maybe 4 or 5 changes of clothes a day. If I ask him if he's wet, he says no. I ask him to touch the clothes, and then he says, oh yeah, sorry mum. But he seems genuinely surprised. I'm at my wit's end, and we've tried reward charts, tons of praise, and almost a year of just waiting for him to get it. I took him to the GP and she said it's completely normal, don't worry, he will get there. I stopped worrying for a while, but I'm just wondering, is there anything more I should be doing?
He sounds like a very relaxed little boy.
Yes.
Almost horizontal. I mean, for me, if they've been to the GP and there's no issues with bladder sensitivity or any physical issue, this is a case of him. I don't think it's probably that he's not bothered. I think the changes and all the cumbersomeness that goes with that would be bothersome to any child.
Yeah.
What I'd recommend is, you know, do the usual stuff around no kind of watching the fluids and things like that. But what I would do is bring him to the toilet at regular intervals and get the preschool to do the same, so he gets into the routine of going, even if he just, and all you want him to do is try and go. And that should minimise the accidents. But it's better having him kind of horizontally relaxed than highly stressed about it.
That is very, very true.
Listen in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. here on Moncrief for more parenting advice from David Carey.